Well, good afternoon, everyone, and hello to those of you on videocast. My name is Lori Conlon. I am the Director of the Office of Postdoctoral Services here at the NIH, and we're pleased to have you today for our second of our installments of the Career Advancement Toolkits in the Industry Track. So the first one was the Industry Overview. Did anyone here attend? I know some of you did. So don't worry, that one's going to be redone throughout the year and at each one of our campuses to make sure each one of you have the opportunity to do the industry overview to figure out where you best fit in the industry market. But today we're going to talk about cover letters and resumes for an industry audience. So obviously most of you are probably going to go to industry who are here in the room who are thinking about it. But a lot of us don't really know how to write that crucial cover letter. So we have today a fantastic speaker from a local company who does HR. And she's going to talk to us all about making sure your cover letter gets you an interview. I want to remind you that up top, we have the list of all the rest of the things happening in the Career Advancement Toolkits. We have the academic career decisions and industry. Another one that you may find interesting this week is Exploring Careers or Career Exploration. That's on Thursday, and it's going to tell you more information about how to do informational interviews, which many of us are interested in. On December 2nd, we will have our next in the series of industry, which is interviewing outside the ivory tower. We'll have a president of a local biotech and an HR person from MedImmune coming to give that talk on how to interview in industry. And once you're done today and you're going to have your cover letters and your resumes all ready to go, I invite you to make an appointment with either myself or one of the career counselors who are actually here. Anne and Elaine are over there. And there's a flyer upstairs for career services, so you can come in and do mock interviews. You can come in and get your cover letter and your resume critiqued by any of us to make sure that you, when you are out on the job market, you are ready to go. And for those of you who are watching by videocast, you can make an appointment with Catherine Foisey, or call me. I'll probably have my email because I sent it out to you. And on the back of this flyer is the OITE in orientation. If any of you do have new postdocs or graduate students, for that matter, who are joining your labs, we have hold orientation the first Tuesday of every month. We'll not have one in December, but back in January we will. So please encourage them to attend. So without further ado, we'll get started. I am pleased to host today Wendy Penry from the Human Genome Sciences Incorporated. I just call it Human Genome, and so when it gets past that, I get a little confused. She is the Associate Director or Assistant Director of HR at Human Genome, and she has also worked at GeneLogic. So she's been an HR for scientist for quite some time now. So I think she has a really good opinion of what you need to get an interview in industry, and I appreciate her time today. Wendy?
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Lori, for the introduction and certainly for the invitation to come speak with you all today. This is my first time, believe it or not. I've lived in this area for almost 20 years, and this is my first time on the NIH campus today. So it's reminiscent of college campuses. It's a great feeling, and I got the immediate sense of the science all around. And that's what I'm used to at HGS and other industry companies. So it's exciting to feel the passion that you have here. And on this topic today, there's a lot that can be said, and certainly not all of it can be covered in the time that we have. So I want to get you thinking about why you're here today as I'm going through a little bit about me. So it's hard for me to stand up here and talk to you without knowing a little bit about all of you, but I will start with me, and then I'll ask you a few questions, and then we'll move on to the agenda. So as Lori said, I'm currently at Human Genome Sciences, and we too just call it HGS, or Human Genome. And I've been there for 5 years. It's been a great time, lots of learning for me. There's lots coming up for us as an organization as well. So much to look forward to. And I've been in human resources for about the last decade. So as Lori and I were just talking before the presentation today, it's interesting to think about half of you, she says, will go into industry positions. And about 30% of you will go into something that maybe you hadn't really planned for. So how that relates to me, is you don't always know where your career is going to take you. And while you prepare and you have an idea about what you want to be when you grow up, sometimes that changes along the way. So I think that one of the things I will talk to you about today, a takeaway message, is being flexible and adapting to different kinds of environments. So for me, I didn't grow up thinking I would go into human resources. It's just not necessarily one of those things at the top of folks' list when they think about firemen, policemen, scientists. Those are all pretty obvious careers. So I started in family and child development and then went into master's degree in family therapy. And believe it or not, there's a lot of parallels in what I was doing there at University of Maryland and what I'm doing now in human resources. So how I consider my job is really people consulting, and it's very interesting work, so I'm pleased to be part of this industry. Okay, so that I can get to know you all a little bit better, I saw a few hands go up with folks who had attended the prior session, but I'm interested in knowing how many of you have gone on at least one interview at some point. Few hands. All right. How many of you done five interviews, between one and five, so more than that? Okay, so most of the room has not been on an interview. How many people have never had a formal job interview? You may have had admissions testing and things like that. How many of you have not been on a job interview? Okay, so that's helpful. And so that gives me at least one reason why some of the folks are here in the audience today. But for those of you who have been on an interview, you've been thinking about resume prep, you've read all the books, you've looked at the websites, you've gotten advice from your friends, anyone just tell me, why did you come today? What attracted you to this particular seminar? Cover letters, okay, how to write them. What else? Okay, all right, so lots about cover letters for academia and wanting to know more about industry. What else? One more. I have a rule of three. I need one more. Okay, target a job. Great. So how many of you have been to at least one job fair? Aha, okay. I was at one last week, and I will tell you a story, or at least some of my thoughts, about how can you interact when you're in a face-to-face situation with a company at a job fair. Lots of companies, lots of people, you walk up, you're kind of going, I don't know where to start, I don't know much about this company, how do I present myself? So I know that's not specifically on our agenda today, but since that's a recent event for me, I thought you might want to hear a little bit about that too. So I have all of, I think, 9 slides today, and I want to be able to make this as interactive as you want it to be. So before I go into the full agenda, the other part that I'm going to want to know from all of you is, what do you want to get out of it? So we've got cover letters. I assume people have specific questions, right? I hope. Because I'm going to plan on talking for about 20 or 25 minutes, and then I'm going to say, and now what? What do you want to know? Lori said I'm a fantastic speaker. I don't know. You'll have to be the judge of that. But I'm certainly one person's opinion with a fair amount of experience in the industry, and I see lots and lots and lots of resumes. So I want you to think about how you want to pick my brain while I'm standing here today. Okay, on to the agenda. So we've covered the first part, why you're here. I want to talk about current market economics. You can't avoid that discussion, and that's happening within the four walls of all kinds of organizations today, so we should talk about that a little bit. What really matters to an employer? So it's similar to, I know how to pitch myself for an academic environment, but how is it different in industry? So I don't know much about the academic environment. I'm only going to speak to industry, and you can tell me how much overlap there is. Hopefully there's a lot of transferable skills there. How to position your story. So what am I, as a potential employer, going to be looking at with all the people who've applied for the one position I have open, let's say, and how do you differentiate yourself? So positioning your story. We'll talk through several bullet points there. Online systems, everything's virtual. I just came from a conversation at HGS about how do we keep branding ourselves? How do we make people in the local community aware of what we're doing and more people aware of what HGS is all about? We're not the Human Genome Project anymore. That was our humble beginnings. We're now drug development. We're a pre-commercialization organization. So we want to make sure that people understand how we've moved along in our lifetime, too. So online systems is the way to go, in addition to, you're not going to be surprised to see networking there. That's always going to be a component of how do you land your first job, how do you get those introductions. And then I just want to make you aware of biotech in Montgomery County. There are over 400, lots of different size, small companies to large companies in Montgomery County. So when you think about where do you want to go, you don't have to look to Philadelphia, New Jersey, the West Coast. There's lots of opportunities right here. Okay, so what really matters to an employer? Some of these are basic, so I will just speak further to those. Or if you have a question in the middle, feel free to raise your hand. I don't have to wait until the end for you to ask questions. So a cover letter that complements your resume. So you've heard before, I'm sure, Your resume is really a technical description of what you have done, what your responsibilities have been, maybe how you have made a difference in whatever company that you've worked for. And your cover letter is a slightly different piece. That is more the sales or the marketing. So beyond the specifics of what I've done in my last two jobs or what I've done in my research, what makes you as an individual different than everyone else that I'm looking at? And how do you as an individual relate to that company's culture, their stage of development, showing that you understand what that organization is working on? So it is going to be a different piece. Should be complementary. Now, in this age of lots of electronic submissions, if you don't give me a cover letter, that's okay too. I think you miss an opportunity by not putting together a good cover letter, but it doesn't have to be long, and it certainly should not simply repeat. As you'll see in my resume, I have done this and this and this. I can see that in your resume, so you don't need to spend your white space in your cover letter doing that. But it doesn't have to be a full page, and certainly I just don't get that many paper resumes anymore. So when you go onto CareerBuilder, Monster, Craigslist, or whatever you're going to use, and you've got a lot of white space, you don't have to fill all that up with your cover letter and resume. So next point is a focused resume that tells a story of where you want to go and how you're going to get there. So it's great that you want to come in and you want to do some research, be in the labs, HPLC, SDS page, all those kinds of skills that you're learning here, and a lot more. But where are you headed? So how are you, again, going to connect what that organization is doing with what you have already done and what you want to do in the future? So help that HR and the hiring manager, those people, make the connection between you, what you already have, and how you can add to that position. Obviously, next point, typos. Oh, make me crazy. So use other people that you can trust and who will give you good feedback and redline whatever you've got until you've got it just right. You are forgiven in cases where you're applying online and it changes the formatting. So sometimes the bullets become question marks or quotations are put in and that looks odd, but you're forgiven for that. But if you have typos where you're using T-H-E-R-E instead of T-H-E-I-R, easy to mistake, lots of those kinds of things, those are easy, screen out. So watch for those. So there again, that's the part of let others help you. Career counselors are in the room, which is great. So they're listening to what I'm recommending, and they probably have some thoughts of their own and the experience that they've seen of a whole bunch of students before you coming through and what works. So take advantage of these ladies in the back and use their services. They're waiting for you and they want to be able to help you too. So use everyone you can get your hands on. So the bottom line in terms of when I'm looking at a resume and a cover letter, I want to know, can this person adapt? So whatever environment you have been in, can you work in my environment? How much do you know about what my environment is? Learning agility. So not learning ability, but can you learn in different scenarios with different people? The book, Everything I Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten, that certainly still applies. So does this person play well in the sandbox? Our tagline at HGS is collaborate, grow, succeed. And I'll tell you that as new people are joining the organization, if you don't collaborate well at HGS, you won't be as successful as you can be. So that's a skill. That's a transferable to one of those soft skills. Demonstrate how you do that. You've done that in teamwork, all kinds of ways, projects, leadership positions. So only part of what we are looking at is going to be that technical base, the skill set that you have. Talk about the leadership positions, extracurricular, volunteer, all kinds of things matter to us. All right, so what's important to you? Clearly, you want to get that across. And so you might say, I've always had a passion for doing this kind of work, or I'm interested in your company because you're working on a drug that someone in my family has that particular disease. And so that's making a connection for your potential employer. So what's important to you should hopefully match up with what the potential employer is also working on. So I just keep saying, draw that connection. So starting with the skills you have acquired, and you can refer to those in your cover letter, you want to build on that from there. So we've already talked a little bit about transferable skills. What are some other transferable skills that you're building on here in your experiences? Anybody? Logical thinking. Sure. So problem solving and logical thinking, that's normal stuff. It doesn't mean there is a problem, but it's just part of what you do every day and part of what happens in business. Yeah. Absolutely. Communication skills and presentation skills. So at HGS, we offer also Toastmasters. So it's the International Public Speaking Group. If that's an area, and scientists, there are a lot of introverts that you know you need to work on, get involved in a Toastmasters club. So you know that that's an area that businesses are going to be looking at too. So they're written. I think you get a lot of practice on that, but the presentation skills maybe are less important in the beginning, but they're going to help you be successful wherever you go. I saw a hand over here. Leadership and management. Right. So your project. So if you're the project lead with a team of four, that's worth pointing out. Or, you know, some of this is going to project to the interview itself. And as the next group comes in and talks about interviews, you should take that series of questions that are on a lot of different websites. Peter Weddle is a great resource. And think about what are your answers to those questions going to be. So you can prepare for that and speak to these transferable skills. Okay, good. Publications. How many? How many is too many? I don't know. I don't have a lot of rules for a resume must be 2 pages and no more. I only want to see half a page of publications. I personally don't have a lot of rules about what should or should not be there. I think that's a relevant question that you can ask a lot of different people and get a lot of different answers. So you have to decide. Maybe you don't want, you know, 50 publications, but the most relevant, or stop something that was more than 3 years old. Maybe you don't need to include those. But if you want to be able to present all of your work and you've got 6 papers, put them all on there. Poster presentations. That's all good stuff, all good learning experience. So we talked a little bit about leadership, special projects. Those are certainly relevant. Tell why you're interested in this employer. That's obvious. But the danger that I see sometimes is with the availability of all these online systems, you can post from CareerBuilder, let's say, to 10 different similar jobs at 10 different companies. And so when I get your resume on my end, it says, dear HR, dear hiring manager, dear sir, okay, that's fine. I'm interested in applying for the scientist position at your company. And then you start to tell your story. That's okay. It's not as good as Dear HGS or something that says, I'm interested in your company because. So now I know you spent time on my company's website and you know a little bit about what we're doing instead of the blast. So the blast is very tempting because you can cover a lot of territory very quickly. But to the extent that you can customize and really say, there are really 3 companies that I would love to work for, focus more on them and avoid the blast application to a lot of different people. All right, so this next one, the employer's business model, it's related. It shows me that you've gone to our website, and again, in the interview process, you want to have done a lot more homework on the companies that you're interviewing with. But I think this one goes to the job fair story. So job fairs are open-ended, lots of companies, lots of opportunities, lots of conversation can happen in just a few hours. But if you've done your homework ahead of time and you've planned a few companies that you want to visit with, and you can walk up to me and you can say, wow, it's really exciting. You've got a couple products in late-stage development. You got some things in mid-stage. You've got some new target development happening. That sounds like a great success story. I want to be part of that. Instead of, oh, HGS, what do you guys do? So I'm not as interested at that point, and that makes sense. So if you know what the company does and you can, again, make that connection with what you have done, I'm far more interested. Make reference to the job profile to which you're applying. So when we say the responsibilities of this job are, and you've got that bulleted list, and then the requirements are, and you've got that list, use that. Use that in your cover letter. You can say, I meet all of the criteria that you're looking for. I have a PhD. I have 2 years of project management experience. I have a lab skills. I've done these other leadership development. I have excellent communication skills. Now you're paying attention to my profile. You've met all 5 things that I asked for. I'm more interested again. So use what's already available to you to be able to make the connection. I probably should have just named this presentation, Making the Connection. Okay. And then it's helpful what not to do. Again, it's the typos. It's the very general. It's also, here's one of my pet peeves. So you're introducing yourself and you're saying, Mrs. Penry has 10 years of experience, blah, blah, blah. Who are we talking about here? Aren't you writing the resume? Aren't you writing your own cover letter? So refer to yourself, I have, I offer, I'm interested, instead of referring to yourself as if it's someone else. You don't want to be too formal, too stilted in your language, and you want to be specific, again, to the job, to the employer, to the opportunity, and that matches really well with where you're headed in your career. How are we doing so far? I have to imagine you've heard some of this before, and it's just some of the basics reiterated here. Sure. Yeah, that's good. I think the storytelling, your story, is between the resume and the cover letter, and they are used a little bit differently. So the cover letter is the hook for whoever's reviewing it, HR, the hiring manager, to keep reading. Keep reading to the next page. If your cover letter's not all that interesting, I might stop right there. I may not even get to your resume, as scary as that may sound. So how do you have the resume tell a story? So it's going to have logic, and I don't think the bullets or the bulleted list is a bad thing. It makes it easier instead of a paragraph format. I don't care where you put your education. You can be top or bottom, however you want to do that. But that it's got a logical flow. And the what I do like to see is an overall summary. There's executive summary or summary of accomplishments or my profile, something at the top that says, here's who I am. In absence of a cover letter, or you know, kind of reiterates what the cover letter had said, and where you're headed. So it's where I am and where I'm headed all at once. And then that gives me an introduction to what you're doing right now and what you did in your prior positions. Is that helpful? So the idea of objective, you know, you get the book on how to put together the best resume. This, again, is my personal opinion. Objective statement, I believe, was there at a time when people graduated from high school, had a general diploma, and were trying to figure out, where do I want to wind up? Now, the objective, quite obviously, is to get that job at that company. And we already know that because you're applying to that particular position. So I would use that space differently and instead talk about, and maybe again, you use the profile for the position to speak to buzzwords, for lack of a better term, but some of the phrases that are in the profile. So, you know, the relevancy on all these websites, and when you Google something and you enter whatever keyword, it's pulling it up by relevance. So the number of hits in web pages based on the phrase that you put in. It's not that different in applying for a position. So the more relevance that what you're describing in your story has to what I have posted, the more likely I'm going to keep reading what you've got. Okay? Other questions? Yeah. So I don't know if everyone heard the question. She wants to know, should you address if you have a lack of experience relative to the profile? Should you mention that or just leave it out? I think I would err on the side of saying, here's what I do have. I meet 1, 2, 3 instead of 4 and 5. I will see, okay, she didn't mention 4 and 5. Let me look for that in the resume. It doesn't have that, but boy, this is really well constructed. There's good energy that comes across in this resume. You should know that hiring managers, the profile that's out there is ideally what they'd like to have. And so if you don't have everything, you should still apply. Because maybe we've been searching for that one position for 6 or 7 months, and the hiring manager is saying, if I can get 3 out of 5 of these things, I'd be happy. So it's hard to tell what's going to work and what's not. There's no one answer to probably just about anything that you're thinking about or asking about today. But we'll get to some other pieces of the networking and the approach on other fronts, too. Okay. All right, so there's a lot of research on this that past behavior is a pretty good predictor of future behavior and future performance. So again, making that connection, drawing the link. But this is more about those transferable skills, those soft skills, and this is, again, what you can focus your cover letter on instead of the technical piece, which tends to be what I have done. So for us, handling change and ambiguity in industry, I mean, let's just look back at the last couple of years. 2008, 2006 are really good examples of lots of merger and acquisition activity. Big companies that you thought, boy, if I can land a job there, I'll have a job for life, and they're getting bought out by someone even bigger than they are. So being able to roll with the punches and change at a moment's notice. So you're in drug development and a product isn't successful at phase two. Okay, it's hard. It's really hard. You've invested blood, sweat, and tears in that product. So how do you move on from that onto the next project? How do you position yourself so that in the event of our company's going to have a layoff, just because you're working on that particular project and the project goes away, you still are able to move over to something else? So that goes back to the learning agility, being able to deal with ambiguity. You're not going to get to have all the answers or have the crystal ball or know what's going to happen next year. So how do you still keep up your performance and the logical thinking and the business perspective in light of lots of different things happening and many of which are out of your control? So we're listening for that. People who are able to say, yeah, I don't need to know everything about what I'm going to be doing next year right now. I can live with that for a little while. Also, ability to learn quickly and not make the same mistakes twice, but also be willing to take a little bit of risk and step out there and make a mistake and be able to handle difficult decisions. So these are some of the things that, I don't know, how much of that is being implemented in your programs now. But those are valuable to employers. Ability to work well with others. I think that one's pretty straightforward. We've heard that one for a long time. Ability to power through and deliver when the heat is on. So under pressure or under first-time situations, how do you react? You might get that kind of question in an interview. Can you tell me about a time when you had to learn something that was new to you, and how did you approach that? So it could be a new skill, it could be a new database, it could be a new project, you're the last one on the team. It could be, you know, you get swapped out from one project to another, so you have to draw on some of those past experiences for that potential employer to say, this person can handle all the different things that we know are coming up. Ability to shift gears at a moment's notice, that's the same kind of thing. So multiple priorities, knowing what's first and second and third, and being able to make those shifts, move those around whenever you need to. And being able to deal with, you know, the management, senior management of the company saying, oh, yeah, you know, we said we're going to do that, but we realized we ran the financial model or the market's not good right now. I still need to come back to that. And so we're not going to be able to do that after all. Disappointing, but how do you move on from that? Demonstrate a passion for the work. I have no doubt that that exists all in this room and all across this campus. That's the easy part. I have postdocs at job fairs come up to me, and they are so excited to tell me their story, and they're bubbling over, and that's very attractive as an employer to find someone who's so excited about the work that they're doing. Innovative thinking. Okay, what's next? Yep, we got that done. What's next? How can we do this differently? All these efficiencies, if it's money or time or process or technology, how do you keep integrating new things? Leadership skills, we talked about that. Maybe you don't want to be a manager. That's fine. You can still have leadership as an individual. How do you share that on teams? And then cultural fit. So you don't get to know necessarily what that company's culture is like. So how do you address that? Probably not so much in a cover letter or resume, but then in the interview. I think it's fair game to ask. So when a candidate says to me, you know, this seems like a really good company, but what's it really like to work here? That's a great question. You should ask that of probably just about everybody that you're interviewing with, because you're going to get a slightly different answer, but hopefully themes across the board. Or someone's going to say, well, you know, I've been here for however many years, and not much has changed, and gosh, you know, only if you want to do this piece of work should you really come here. It's surprising to me what people will say on the interview team. Now, I think for us at HGS at this point, we get great feedback that everyone's singing from the same page. There's a lot of passion for our work. There's a lot of enthusiasm for what's coming up next. But, you know, you should be doing the two-way interview. So it's not just that company looking at you, but you have to decide, is this really a place that I want to work? So to the extent that you can use the company's website, probably their career section, to learn about their culture. Are there pictures of the employees? How do they talk about the employees of the company? How do they involve them? Those are some things that you'll want to know about to see if that's a good place for you to be. All right, before I go to the next slide, let's see if it's on the next slide. Nope. I want to talk about the current economic situation and It's a lot harder right now. So you're feeling that at home with your own budgets and your stocks and whatever cash accounts you have, and it's really a crazy place right now, unprecedented. And at this time of year, so how many of you are finishing in the next 3 months, within the next 3 months, and you're going to be out there on the market? Okay, I see one hand. 6 months? A year? So a lot of you are a year out. All right, well, that's good. That's the majority of the room, because you guys are probably in a better position than those who are sooner than that. And that's just a reality check. It is right now a time of companies looking at their budgets, and that's normal for this time of year, and deciding what do we need for next year. But in the economic conditions that we have, everyone, and I'm sure it's happening on this campus too, is talking about, well, is that something that we have to have to carry the business forward? We don't want to sacrifice that for sure. But is there anything we can defer, delay, or just not do? And clearly, if you're talking about project work, then that means people. So I don't need as many people because we're not going to do that project until the second half instead of the first half. So I'm just acknowledging that in this particular time, and we don't know when it's going to end, that you may find it's even harder than it was before if you've been out on the market before. So you're getting as much of this information, using your career counselors, using each other, using networking, which we'll talk about in a minute, is going to be even more important. It's a really, really odd time. I think we'll get through it, but it's hard to tell where the end is. So companies are being more conservative right now. You knew that already, right? That's not news. Okay. So that brings us to networking. And everyone says, you know, if you know someone, that's a great way to get your foot in the door. That is still true. We see, I want to say around 25,000 resumes a year. It's a lot of people to consider, and we make fairly quick decisions in going through those. So if I see an employee referral, I give that more weight than I do someone who's applying directly through our website or through some other website, in part because our employees are also recruiters for us. They know who's going to be a good fit in our culture. And so if you aren't involved in some networks related to your field, then start doing that. That's something, you know, on the list for 2009. That's going to go a long way. And just to be out there hearing what people are talking about, getting more perspectives, the grip and grin, sharing business cards or information. So friends and family, they're always there for you. You should keep using those folks. Any of your conferences or presentations where you're doing posters, make sure you're not just on the receiving end of all the folks that are stopping by to hear about your work, but you're also getting out there and you're meeting some of the presenters or asking them a few questions. Can I follow up and send you an email? At the job fairs, those still are good networking events, just to see who's hiring, what's coming up for those organizations. You can later say, you know, I met someone from your HR team or one of the hiring managers. You can ask for the business card of the folks there at the booth, but I'll tell you what, we really try not to give them out because there's so many people and so much internally that it's hard to keep up with all that. I don't want to discourage you still from asking. We will give them out to those that we believe really are viable possibilities or that we saw something from that face-to-face interaction too. So that's another good way just to get a sense of what's happening across the industry and who's hiring. Who's on LinkedIn? Who's on Facebook? Okay. I just got on Facebook a couple weeks ago at the insistence of one of my colleagues, and one of my college roommates that I haven't talked to for about 20 years just sent me an invite. So that's pretty neat. It's a woman I thought I would never hear from again, and there's her picture. She looks the same. I don't know if I look the same, but at any rate, it's pretty amazing all the different options that are available to you. So you can be pretty passive in these social and professional networks, but you can make a lot of friends. And you can make a lot of connections through there. So I would say explore that if you haven't already. It doesn't cost anything. And again, it's pretty easy. You can just get your basic profile up there and do a search on prior employers or by zip code or lots of different from your undergraduate schools and say, hey, haven't talked in a while. And through those kinds of opportunities, because companies can post jobs to their networks and so on and so on. So I would recommend that you do some of that social networking if you're not already. User groups. Anybody on user groups? Okay. See, one hand in the front, and she already has a good job at NIH. So that's another one. There are lots of different kinds of user groups, so that's another way to, and LinkedIn offers other professional networks within the broad sphere. So and another easy way to be more specialized with the people that you can talk to. And your associations. Everybody part of some association? So they've got career fairs, they've got job postings through their websites, they've got opportunities, again, doing your posters and presentations. So outreach. Outreach is where you should be focusing. It's not just the one-stop shopping of applying online and keeping your fingers crossed. You're really going to have to get out there. Online systems. I mean, this is one of the areas that Lori wanted me to speak to. And I thought there are a lot of different things I could say about that, but I didn't really know what you all might want to know. So I'll make one comment, and then I'll ask for some questions. Here again, as I said earlier, there's a convenience to the potential candidate as well as to the employer of all these online systems. But the downside for the employer is what I described earlier, where people are doing very broad posting, and then I get very generic resumes that I'm not really interested in because the people haven't taken the time to learn about my company. So it's easier to then consider someone else who does have an understanding of what we're doing. So while our volume is much greater with all the online postings, I think the quality is also better. We're getting more sourcing through websites. It's just, and I know that it feels like, so I've applied and now it's a black hole. I mean, what really happens? What happens to my resume once I hit send and it says, you know, your send was successful? So what we do, we have an online system that when you're moved from one folder to another, you should get an email that's generated that basically I call it the thanks but no thanks. It really says we acknowledge and you've got some good experiences but just not a fit or weren't going to be considered for that particular position. So at least you know and you can kind of close the book on that particular opportunity at that point in time. But what companies are feeling is much greater volume, and you are probably feeling far less response from the organizations you're applying to. So those things are sometimes working against each other. But what would you like to know about this topic? Question over here. Okay, so the question's about key phrases, and are we searching for those, and then are we also bypassing those that don't necessarily have the buzzwords in them? So again, my personal opinion, I look at every single resume that is applied for every position that I'm working on, and that's true for my colleagues too. So I don't bypass something because it doesn't have any of the requirements or any of the keywords in it. I will tell you, just by bolding some of the keywords that are in the job posting, it does grab my attention a lot faster. So, oh, hey, it tells me you're paying attention. So it certainly facilitates the consideration process to repeat or to pull from whatever the posting has and for you to use that in your cover letter or in your resume. For us, and most companies now do have a database, so when I open another position, I can go into our database and search for people. And again, that's where the keywords might come in handy. So if it's for, you know, a different kind of job or 6 months later and you haven't seen my posting, I can go in and find you again. So it's helpful to use them, but I wouldn't say that I don't bypass people who don't have them. Okay? Yes. Yeah, well, it's a good question. So she's asking online systems, is it all the other websites or the particular company website? And I'm probably referring broadly to both. But in this particular example where you're going through another, a Monster, a Career Builder, BioSpace, some of the big ones that have multiple company listings, that's where it gives you an option and it gives you the job search agents a lot of times. I think those are helpful. But what we as employers would really like for you to do is if you see one of our postings on those major websites is you come to our company website directly and apply. So that says, again, you've gotten an update, you've done a little bit more homework, oh, I see your balance sheet is this, or you've grown since the last time I visited your site, or whatever. So we want serious candidates, and I know you want to be considered a serious candidate, so make the connection. Yep. That's a good question. I want to talk about immigration in a minute, too, and relocation. Online systems. So let me start with the usual format for the company system. Some companies, the larger ones, pay to have jobs wrapped. So whatever is on my company page is also going to look identical on Washington Jobs, and that's true for us. Some companies just have Monster, upload everything that they've got, boom, there it is again. So that's one way to do it. We do post everything that we have other than an immigration case. So what you see is what you get. Now, at the job fairs, you can talk to whoever the representatives are at that table and say, what's coming up next quarter? What's coming up next year? Right? So there are things that we know about that are in the works that aren't necessarily posted yet. So again, I wouldn't be discouraged by not seeing that, but if it's one of your target companies, it's on your short list, just keep going back periodically and checking on it. I also would say in any of these online systems, either the company database or an external one, that let's say there are three scientist jobs, and you're thinking, well, I could qualify for all three of those. Do I need to apply to all three of those? And the answer probably is yes, because those might be in three different groups. They might have three different hiring managers. They might have slightly different skill sets that maybe you can't quite tell what the differences are. But in our database, I can see, okay, you've applied for this position and two others. And that's fine. I'm going to think of what you've shown to me in the context of the hiring manager. So maybe I'm going to forward you for two of them, but I'm not for the third just because I know that that person's looking for something different or that the match just isn't as strong as what they're looking for. So there are a lot of decisions that happen. Let me talk about immigration and relocation real quickly. So I've worked in immigration for about 9 years. I'm kind of the go-to person in the company for anything anybody wants to know. And I really understand how sensitive that is to anyone who has that need. I also appreciate when a candidate tells me on the resume what their status is. So if I'm not sure, then I'm going to forward you on to the hiring manager if you're otherwise qualified. If you tell me you're a permanent resident, I'm definitely going to send you on. If you tell me you're on H-1B, I'm going to say, now for this position, again, the whole decision-making process of how long have we been looking, how readily available is this skill set, does it make sense to sponsor somebody for this particular position? And the answer might be yes, and the answer might be no. But I would rather make that decision early than finding that out later in the game and bringing you in for an interview and then saying, you know what, we just don't sponsor this level. But at the scientist and above level, we do. But I would just say that it's helpful to know where you are and if you're transferable or not. Did I see a hand? No, okay. Other piece on relocation. So, again, this came up last week at a job fair, and some good candidates, and I'm thinking in my head, wow, this is a bachelor level and 2 years of experience, and this person's in Boston. Now, they look like a really good candidate, and I wish they were in my own backyard, but they're not. So now I need to decide, do I send that person on, and do we spend the interview and the travel and potentially let them know, look, we can't relocate at this level, or we do relocate, but here's the maximum dollar amount. So there's got to be a discussion there. So if you're in a position where you're applying for something that's out of state and you're willing to sponsor your own relocation, we like to know that too. If you're not and you're hoping the company's going to pay for it, then you don't say anything. But if you're saying, here's my situation, so the more transparent you can be with the employer, the faster a decision will be made about your application. That's probably my bottom line there. So if you're willing because you've got family or friends in another state and you just want to get there and you're thinking, I don't know if this company sponsors relocation, just say willing to pay my way, and that might facilitate the process too. You can put that in your cover letter or not. Or, you know, if you're passed on to the hiring manager and you're having that discussion on the phone and you can say, you know, look, I just want to be clear. I love your company. This position's a great fit for me. And should you need to consider me or that you want to consider me, I'm happy to pay my way for relocation if that's a concern. And then you're going to get some feedback. Oh, no, we would cover that for you. Or, oh, okay, well, that's good to know. So you're at least continuing to keep that dialogue open. Yep, in the back.
After you've applied online, would you suggest sending an email to the hiring official, or would it be considered stalking the person?
I think it takes about 5 times to be stalking, so you're fine the first couple times. Although it reminds me of a story of a candidate that for the last 3 years periodically applies for every single job that we have, and I mean every job. So I just can't imagine that someone thinks that we're really going to call her up and say, oh, yeah, you finally applied to the right job. We're interested. So stalking. No, seriously, on following up, it's fine. So if you tell me, because people say, okay, I'm going to send this to you and I'll follow up within the next 2 weeks. If you told me you're going to do that, I'm always interested to see if you really are. So, yeah, call the main line. I want to talk to somebody in HR. I've applied for this position. They'll get you to the right place eventually. Leave a voicemail. Hi, I applied last week. Just wanted to check status. Again, if you don't hear back, don't take that as a no. It's just there are lots of priorities. So, yeah, I would say if you tell them you're going to follow up, then do. And if you don't mention that you're going to follow up and you're feeling antsy, then, yeah, an email is also appropriate through the general email or the general line or however you want to make your mark. What else? Okay, online systems. All right, after this slide, it's all questions, so get ready. I pulled this off a website last night just to maybe broaden your awareness of who's in your backyard right now. And these are different size companies, different models, different stages of development, different focuses, but just so that you know some more names than probably a couple of the big ones you're already familiar with. So see, I put HGS on there. I put NIH on there. And then some others I'm sure you're familiar with. FDA, huge employer. So just to get you thinking about what other companies are out there, MD Bio and Maryland Tech Council have joined together, and they are more of a government affairs group, but they too have a job posting section on their website. And the idea there is that you're capturing the local people instead of, again, the national job boards. Use Craigslist. So if you're looking for opportunity, Craigslist has, you know, a category for everything. And I've had success, particularly in the technology area, using Craigslist, too. So think broadly about where can I go to find who's hiring. It's the same, you know, we're saying where can I go to find the people that I know are out there. And again, hopefully I've given you a few ideas about how to approach that today. All right, from here, it's all Q&A. Fire away. So the question's about how do we just do postings on our website? Do we use other databases? Let me take that even broader and talk about our whole recruitment strategy. So absolutely, we use the HGS or our company website. We use Washington Jobs. We use Biospace. We go to Higher Health job fairs. We use Career Builder. We use niche sites. We use associations. We use the user groups. We use LinkedIn. We use recruiters. We use retained firms. There's a lot of effort that goes into finding the right people for the right job. So it just goes back to how do you make yourself found? I know that's not proper, but how do you make yourself visible out there so that you have multiple ways that someone will find you? Okay, sure. So on Monster in particular, that's a site that has really seen tremendous explosion in terms of numbers of resumes and activity and lots of advertising, which is great. Personally, I feel like Monster's got such breadth that it's hard to find the right candidate for the positions that I have open in the biotech industry. We use Career Builder more and Biospace, and yes, we do have packages where we buy to the resume database, and so we can go into our own database and we can use other databases to search for people. And I'll tell you, just Google searches, just Boolean searches, and LinkedIn, again, I mean, so we are using multiple ways to try to find the right people for the jobs. But yeah, we purchase databases. Yes. Anyone else ever felt like that? Yeah, a few hands go up. It's similar to the stalking question in the back, right? How many times is enough, and at what point is it too much? I'll use my rule of three. So it's easy to send a quick email and say, hi, we met at the job fair, just wanted to check in. I've posted my resume online to the position that we discussed, and I'm eager to hear back from you. So that's kind of an open-ended, I'm here. All right, and then a week later, you haven't heard anything, and someone told you, well, I'll forward it to the hiring manager when we get back to the office. It may be the hiring manager. I mean, there are lots of different things that could be happening in an organization, but it's fair to be perseverant to a point. So then you can say, just checking in, didn't hear from you last week. I'm beginning to interview with other companies, or I'm considering other companies, but you are one of my first choices, so you could put it that way and say, oh, look, like you got my attention now. And so I would try a second time. So maybe now it's a voicemail. And then third time is you pick voicemail or email. It depends on if you got anything back at that point. And then say, okay, well, I don't know if I would say, I assume you're not interested, but you could just say, this is me again. And then the third time I would just let it go and say, for whatever reason, they're not interested in me at this point. But you can say, I'm still interested in your company. I'll continue to check your website periodically for other opportunities that might be a better fit. It's hard. I know you want feedback. It's hard to give feedback to everyone who's saying. And then after an interview, you think it went great. And again, you never hear back. I mean, that one's a shame on that company, especially if they brought you in, if you don't hear anything back. So you want to make sure you're collecting a few people's business cards when you're at that interview. But in the very early stages, again, it's about this big funnel of volume. So I would, rule of three, check in three times and assume you're not going to have a second date. What else? Yeah. So you're asking, how do you get through to those organizations? It's probably a very similar answer. Just, you can't give up because you want to get in. You have to be able to have multiple shots on goal, so you should have multiple opportunities and not hang your hat on the one thing that you're looking at, and be able to accept that I may not get an answer back, and I need to assume that that's a closed chapter for a little while and move on to the next thing. So I think you just keep mining and you just keep working at it. Other than that, I don't have a specific answer or formula for how to get a response back. Yes. Okay. So the question is about how limited am I without permanent residency? It depends. It is, again, for immigration, I know it's been a really crazy time for a long time, and the process has gotten better and then longer again, and it's no doubt expensive adventure. So what you might do is first, I think at the PhD level and beyond, most companies, many companies, a sufficient number of companies, are going to sponsor for whatever your immigration need is. If you're on an F-1 and you're moving to an H, or you want to do an H transfer, or you want to get to that permanent residency, ask the question up front, and then you'll know, do I spend my time and energy with this organization or not? And I mean maybe in a job fair, face-to-face setting. Is it worth it for you to do it on your own in advance? It's not so much of a deterrent. It's more of another piece of consideration for people who are in that situation. So it is not a deterrent to me if you are at a scientist and above level. Likewise, there are positions that are notoriously hard to fill where I would be very willing to sponsor somebody for whatever status that they needed. However, similarly, there are positions where I get a lot of applicants and I might decide I don't need to sponsor someone who's in an immigration status for that particular position. So the answer is it depends, and I'm only one perspective, and you'll have to just wade through that. But I think it's fair to ask that up front for your information, too. I think it may be harder to file as an individual than it is through an employer. Other questions? Yes.
You mentioned
So what do you really want to know? You put several things out there. I want to make sure I answer your question. So you should consider pharmaceutical sales, and I'm really not kidding. So you've got the scientific background to be knowledgeable about the drugs, and sales is in very high demand. If that's part of what you'd be interested in, I was just talking to one of our business development folks yesterday, and he was sharing his story of how he got into this position. And again, it was sort of a serendipity where he had finished his postdoc and had come up with some new antibody work, and the company wanted to patent that, and one thing led to another, and then he got some VC funding, venture capital funding, and started his own small company, and they went into a mid-sized company doing business development. And so think of things beyond the logical track of what can I do next given my education and experience. So being too willing to travel. The positions, at least for what we do, would specify percent of travel. So for our clinical operations team, where they're managing sites around the world, we need people who are willing to do some travel. If you're working for a contract research organization and you're in a position like that, you're going to be traveling 50, 60% of the time. So most jobs will say significant travel required or some travel, so you can target the position too. Also be open to, okay, let me get my foot in the door and start in position A, but down the road, I'm thinking about position B. So how do you make, even once you join an organization, your network internally so that people are aware of who you are and you can tap into that experience too? We do a lot of internal development. So I could tell you stories for the rest of the afternoon about people who've started one role and moved into another one and maybe another one. Sure. So the question is, if the job posts for a master's and you've got a PhD, should I apply? Again, the profiles to me are the perfect candidate. And I tell hiring managers, at the beginning and the middle and the end of the process, you may not get your 10 out of 10. You're not going to be able to walk down your list and get all 10 things that you want. So the 80-20 rule applies here. If you get 80% and you've got a gap, and maybe it's a learning gap or a skill gap or just a knowledge gap, then you need to be willing to train for that or develop people for that. So certainly, if you're over or under what the profile is, you can acknowledge that, or you can just say, you're going to get more because I have this advanced degree. So I wouldn't tell you don't apply for something that lists a master's and you have a PhD, but again, you may be overqualified and then screened out. It's just, there's so much dynamic going on behind the job posting that you just have to play that out. A few more? Another one.
So a lot of people from our office ask about, I'm going to have a two-body problem. Do I tell that up front?
A what problem?
A two-body problem.
Meaning
my spouse and your job as well.
Got it.
Do I tell it up front, or at what point in the job search do you recommend that?
At what point in the job search do you talk about the people who are attached to you that you may need to bring along? So it's an interesting dance, because there are certain things that we're not allowed to ask you. Can't ask you when you were born, where you were born, who else lives in your household, all kinds of things. We can ask things that are related to the job and are bona fide occupational qualifications. Okay, so I need to confirm you have the PhD that you tell me that you have. We can ask about that. So it's a little bit of a sensitivity. But what winds up happening oftentimes is that the candidate says, oh, and my spouse told me good luck on my way out the door, my child when I dropped them off at school. So we wind up listening for those kinds of things too. It's not a deterrent. If you're interviewing with a company that says, gosh, we'd love to have you but can't bring anybody else along, it's probably not a company you want to work for. I mean, there's an understanding that you're going to have life events. You're going to get married. You're going to have kids. You're going to move on and do a lot of different things. So that's part of the package. It doesn't even cross my mind as far as, other than how big is the family, right? So in terms of my relocation cost, and I don't say, we can't hire that person because they're going to cost too much. We want the best people for the job. And we want to keep you there. We want you to be happy. We want you to continue to develop. But it's got to be right on both sides. but, you know, the dependents, spouses, other relationships are, to me, irrelevant in terms of decision making. Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot. So let me make sure, check me at the end, make sure I answered, because that's a multiple part. And I that's one of my things that I like to do sometimes in interviews is throw a lot at a candidate and see if they can remember everything. I don't do that very often. I do that accidentally more than on purpose. Okay, so you have multiple interests. First thing for me is it would be better if you can show me that you have worked in those two or three areas before. All right, and that's not going to be the case for a lot of you in the room. Well, you have broad interests, and you want to be three different things, maybe, because you're getting your first job, and you're not quite clear about that yet. That's where it's harder. So if you don't have some experience to back up what you're applying for, it's okay to say, I'm interested in three of your different positions. But again, making the connection is going to make it easier for me to consider you and to say yes and to send you on to the hiring manager. So I would say, in a case of not having the experience and having interest in three, pick two or pick one. What's your best shot, right? What's the probability of really being seriously considered for all three of those jobs when there probably are other candidates who have relevant experience who are also applying? So if you want to keep it focused. Now, on the other hand, if you're applying to a really large organization, chances are your resume is going into that database and three different people in HR or three different hiring managers are reviewing your application. So they're not even talking to each other to know you've applied for two other positions. In my organization, that might happen where it comes in and two or three people are looking at it, but we're also talking to each other and saying, did you see this one? Did you see that one? So I would, in fact, do three different cover letters. Same resume, three different cover letters for the three different positions and go that route. But if you're not a strong candidate, then you're probably not going to be considered. So if it's an interest that you have, it would be better to get one of those jobs and then think about that as a future role. Two more. Oh, we got two hands. Okay. Well, you're going to want to find a company that is looking to hire postdocs. So for us, that period in time was probably 5 or 6 years ago. So we aren't an organization that's hiring a lot of postdocs at this point. So think about some of the other ones that were on that earlier page. And I think you're going to have to be able to still make the connection and be open to that more entry-level position. And they are out there. It's just that many of you, there are many similarly situated people when you're looking at that first step into industry. So someone had mentioned a recruiter, recruiting agency. That's another consideration for you. So they have multiple clients. So any one recruiting agency might have 10 of the same positions at 10 different organizations. And you only know of two of them. So now they've just exposed you to 8 potential other opportunities. So that's another thing I would do is in addition to just applying directly to companies, is to find a few good recruiters. They're on LinkedIn, they're on Facebook, you can do a search for jobs, and it winds up taking you to a recruiting organization instead of to the actual employer, have that conversation with them. So again, you're broadening your network and your options. But it will be harder if it's your first industry position. It makes all this other stuff more important.
About that, or what do you think about maybe should I send that?
I think you answered your own question there. Really? So the advantage to applying even when there's not a job that's relevant to what you want to do is open, assuming that that website allows you to do that, is the database mining. So next month, when I do post a position, I'm going to go in and look maybe by zip code or look for those keywords or the skill set or some other factors, and oh, there you are. You didn't even know the job was open, but since you applied, you're in the database. Now, companies do that to greater or lesser degrees, so that's only one possibility. The other one is just what you said, is finding out who do I know or who do I know that knows someone that can get me an introduction or exploratory interview, or I just need to put on my reminders that I need to go back every month and see if there's something open, or I need to catch them at the next job fair so you can get that information of things that aren't posted yet. Yep. But keep pursuing those companies that you're really interested in. Yes?
So I have two CVs, and one CV, I've listed my skill sets, very specifically, using my protein, my chemistry skills, my molecular biology, and my CrossFit.
Did everyone hear the question? He's got two resumes that are positioned differently depending on what the business model is or what the skill need is for different organizations. So it's, which one do I use? And he's gotten differing opinions. It depends, right? So you're collecting opinions, and that's all they are, is opinions. So there's not any one thing, there's not any singular thing that you might do differently after today that will ensure that you land that job. It's a combination of things. So I would say, in response to that, it still is, you can pick resume A or resume B. If my company doesn't do one of those, clearly you're not going to show me that stuff as much as you're going to show me the other. And you're still going to relate it to that job posting, and you're still going to tell me why you're interested in my organization and an understanding of what we're doing. So I don't know. I might have a reaction if I had both of your resumes sitting in front of me. Oh, I definitely prefer this one. But it's again, it's not a singular factor that gets you considered or not. I would say use your judgment. there's not one answer to that one. Okay. Oh, good. Yeah, so that's something, that's one of the metrics that we track quarterly and at year end. Where are all of our new hires coming from? So our greatest source of referral is our employee referral program, and that is fantastic because it says people like to be in our organization. They're, again, helping us reach out to the community and find other good people for our organization. It's tremendous. Another one are agencies. They're the recruiting firms. So for us, at our agent stage, we have some very specialized skills, and they're not necessarily found locally. So we rely on agencies. And then it is going to be websites after that. So I would say, I think it's around 20%, 23% come through, and websites is broad. It's both the HGS, the corporate website, and any other place that we've done a posting that's more that electronic version. So those are our top three sources. Okay, last one. Yes. You're in between.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? For that last one, just for fun, I'm going to throw that back out to the group because I don't have all the answers. So her question is, I'm too much for this one position that's bachelor's or master's, and I'm not enough for one that has management and 5 to 10 years of experience. No one else has had that, right? That's never happened to you. So you're in that middle bucket. of an advanced degree and some experience, but not ready for managing people yet. What have you guys done? What's your strategy in those cases? Lori? Counselors?
Well, I would also say communicate with the company. Do some networking. Talk to someone who works there. Talk to somebody in HR. You know, make a contact to get some sense of how they view it.
Yep. So I think, again, it's one of those, there are multiple ways you can approach that, and I will, again, say the answer is it depends. But you really are, so there, you've talked about three levels of positions, and let's say you're at the B level. You're not at the C level where it's management plus several years of experience that you haven't gained yet. And that may be the case. And that may be, you know what, I'm sorry, but you're really not going to qualify for this particular position. And you're finding a lot of those in the industry right now. And you're right, though, that if you're overqualified for that more entry-level position, we don't need a PhD to fill that particular need. We would worry about you not being engaged long enough or wanting to move on. So there are all kinds of things that employers do have some specifics, but then again, depending on the hiring manager, the length of the search, the business keeps evolving. From the time I posted it to the time I fill it, some things may have changed and we didn't update the profile, and now we would consider someone more junior or more senior to what's been posted. So network, find out, apply. Maybe your expectations aren't high that, yep, they're going to consider me for this position, but it doesn't hurt to apply and then find out. But keep looking. You know, use all your different resources to be able to get that first position. So thank you very much for your attention and your engagement today. I hope that was helpful.
So I want to just summarize real fast of things that I heard through the talk. Tie things together, have an executive summary that makes sense and goes back to the job, and make more friends. Everybody needs more friends. So I'm going to be sending you guys an evaluation as you leave today, back in your inbox. In that evaluation, Wendy recommended a couple of things here. She recommended Toastmasters. We actually do have one on campus. I'll send you the link to that. She recommended Peter Weddle. I will send you links to that. I also have links to cover letters, examples for life scientist PhDs that I will send you as well. Because we can tell you, there's no magic formula, and I think that's what she was getting at the end. There's no magic pill. There's no magic, if you do this, you will have a job. There is none of that. So we'll give you some examples that you can follow. And again, once it's time, you have yours done, come see one of the counselors or come see me, and we'll be happy to look over your cover letter to make sure it's good. When I applied for my job, first job out of a postdoc, I gave 8 people the cover letter and resume and 8 people the job ad, the same 8 people, and had each of them comment back because I wanted that job so badly. And each one of them came back to me with something different that I should be adding in and taking out. And it made me a much stronger candidate for that job. So use your friends.
Did you get the job?
I did get the job.
That worked.
It did work. Okay, with that, let's give Wendy and I a round of applause. And I'll see you all on December 2nd for interviews for industry.